Moving to item S, genetic-based investigation of blue lion, tile fish, and snowy grouper stock structure. Jan McDowell. Good evening.
How are you? I'll try to make this.
Don't answer the question till we get out of here.
I'm trying not to, but I did my homework. Yeah,
15 minutes.
All right, so this is what we want to do is a genetic investigation of the blue lion tilefish and the snowy grouper along the U.S. East Coast. The reason we want to do it is that blue lion tilefish and snowy grouper have sort of become the focus of a deep drop fishery in Virginia over the past several years. Until a few years ago, it was thought that North Carolina was the northern extent of the range for both of the species. And what's happened is, you know, basically a virgin fishery has been discovered in Virginia. And as a result, there have been several world records in Virginia waters. Currently, they're managed by the South Atlantic Fisheries Management Council, which is, again, because it was thought that North Carolina was the northern extent of the range. And so Virginia actually falls outside the management range for these species. There are current Virginia recreational limits. You can catch 7 blue line tilefish or 1 snowy grouper. There are problems with both species as far as a recreational fishery. They're both, because of their life history parameters, susceptible to rapid hyperdepletion. That's because they're both long-lived, slow-growing species, and they're very late to mature. When I say long-lived, I think there were aging studies of snowy grouper off Brazil that put the maximum age at about 59 years, and studies off North Carolina put the maximum age at more like 29 years. But either way, they're very long-lived. And they live in localized aggregations as adults, and so that's really easy, especially in today's world of GPSs, because they tend to stay put as adults, to just go and wipe out a population fairly quickly. And because they're prone to barotrauma, because you catch them below 240 feet, it's not really good for a catch and release fishery. They don't survive the release very well. There were studies done off North Carolina and in 2004 and in 2009, and it showed that for blue line tilefish, both the age structure and the sex ratio have undergone really large changes over a short period of time because of overfishing. And PSA analysis, which is sort of an assessment of whether a fishery is ecologically sustainable, so it's the risk of human impact, said that blue line tilefish was rated most vulnerable to overfishing. Snowy grouper also have a set of life history characteristics that add sort of another layer of complication. They have, again, they're slow growing, they're late to mature, but they're also protogynous hermaphrodites. And so all fish start out female. And the females begin to mature at around 3 years with 100% maturity at age 7, but no males under the age of 7 have been found. So you can imagine what that does to a fishery. And larvae, so far, have only been found in the Florida Keys, although this is just probably a lack of looking or a lack of luck. You don't know where to look for the larvae. They form spawning aggregations, and the pelagic larval duration, which is when a lot of the mixing occurs between different geographic regions, is unknown. But if it's like other epinephrine groupers, it's probably, I would say, 30 to 60 days. It's usually how long the larval duration is in other related groupers. Looking at studies done off North Carolina again, they looked at snowy grouper in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. And over that period of time, the number of males went from 22.9% to 1.9% of the population. And so it's not too hard to imagine what that does to the fishery, but there are no males. It's because all the larger fish are males, and they don't become males till age 7. And so they're at a really high risk of overexploitation and of being overfished. So the question is, I know there are other studies of blue-line tilefish and snowy grouper going on, so why in the world would we spend more money on them, and why should we do genetic studies? There's actually no population genetic studies for either species, and there's actually no genetic information at all for either species. They're completely unstudied. And if we have no information about genetics, we have no information about connectivity among locations. So we don't know if stocks in Virginia are self-recruiting. So the fish that spawn in Virginia, do all those larvae stay in Virginia? And is Virginia just a self-recruiting population that's on the northern sort of extent of the range for both of these species? Or does the Virginia stock rely on input from other geographic areas? We have larvae coming in from North Carolina every 60 days. Or is Virginia actually feeding other populations? So what are the extent of interconnection? And you can sort of imagine that if Virginia is completely self-recruiting, the fishery is much more vulnerable to overexploitation. And so it'd be really good to know about the connectivity of the populations. And also, if we have baseline measures of genetic diversity, it'll allow us to monitor the populations off Virginia. In other species that have the similar life history characteristics, a loss of genetic diversity has been documented. So as soon as overfishing starts to occur, you start losing alleles. So if you're looking at just one genetic marker, and you know that usually you see 10 alleles at that marker, you start to see 8 alleles or 7 alleles, it's a very good indication of overfishing. So what we want to do is assay genetic variation to assess stock structure of both species, blue-line tilefish and snowy grouper, collected from across the range of both species. We want to take samples from Virginia, from North Carolina, as far down as the Gulf of Mexico, and we want to focus on rapidly evolving molecular markers, namely mitochondrial DNA and microsatellites. They're rapidly evolving, so we can see changes in the genetic composition fairly rapidly. And the benefits of a study like this would be that if significant genetically based stock structure is found, fishing pressure may result in the loss of unique genetic variation. And if you lose genetic variation, you're also losing evolutionary potential. You're losing the ability to adapt to change. So it'd be really good to, it's a chance to be proactive. We know we've got a sort of a virgin fishery, and it's a chance to look at what's out there right now as far as genetic diversity and monitor it and try to maintain the genetic diversity that we have. And also, loss of alleles are a proxy for overfishing. So it's just another way for us to see if overfishing is occurring. And so it's pretty critical to the ongoing conservation of the populations, and we'll make all the data probably available to managers at the state, the regional, national levels for stock assessments and the development of management plans. Because if you're assessing stocks and you don't know about the genetic structure, you can vastly overestimate or underestimate your genetic stocks. So, thank you. Any questions?
Any questions, Ms. Dowell?
Yeah.
How are you going to get the fish that you're going to sample?
We have some samples already. We've actually gotten fish from the program that Joe Griss was talking about, the freezers. Mm-hmm. So we have those samples, and we also have several colleagues in North Carolina and the Gulf of Mexico that are willing to collect for us and just...
I mean, we're not really targeting Virginia fish.
We are targeting Virginia fish, but we have to have something to compare them to. So we have to... We look at Virginia fish, and within Virginia, we'll know what is the genetic diversity. So looking at these genetic markers, how many alleles do we have? And over time, are we going to... You know, it'll give us something to compare 5 years from now to say, have we lost a lot of alleles? But also looking between Virginia and, say, North Carolina, we can tell whether it's a big connected population because of the larval dispersal, because of that long larval duration, or whether we have a unique genetic stock that's really young.
Why specifically snowy grouper?
Specifically snowy grouper? Well, blue-line tilefish and snowy grouper because they're fairly new fisheries.
I've done a whole lot of deep drop fishing, uh-huh. And it's been my experience now that we have the one grouper limit.
Uh-huh.
We go out and very quickly we catch five wreckfish.
Right.
which is a grouper which shuts us down. So our chances of catching a snowy grouper, I mean, probably I've made 15 or more trips, and we've caught one snowy. So, I mean, to me, it's, I mean, I don't see how we're really impacting the population of snowy grouper if, I mean, we're just catching these wreck fish. You drop down, everybody's got a fish on, you know, and you're finished fishing for grouper for the day.
Because it's a new fishery, and because it is sort of a virgin fishery, it gives us a good chance to look at genetic diversity and document changes over time. And also, it was, you know, because of the other studies going on at ODU, it's just a good complement. It would sort of give a complete picture. This is sort of a missing piece of what they're doing. So, I'd love to look at wreckfish, too.
I mean, that, I mean, I don't...
suggested to us that we look at...
I think that the wreckfish are much more abundant mm-hmm. off of Virginia coast than this. I mean, the snowies are out there, but... if you're following what you're supposed to be doing, we can't really continue to target them because the wreck fish are so abundant. So.
Droge?
In your project description, you have in one of the paragraphs where it says a snowy grouper is a commercially important deep water species. Have you approached the commercial board with
no,
this?
No, I wrote that, and then I actually looked, and actually in 2009 they caught 103 pounds, and in 2010 they caught 0 pounds. So the combined value over 2009
and 2010
was
$1.
So that's sort of
no,
if you were fishing.
Well, if you're not catching a recreation, you're not catching
a recreation.
Why would you not catch a snowy groupie by continuing to fish?
And one other question, Mr. Chairman. On your budget page, how do you justify a 5% increase?
So we catch that and we quit. So we don't keep throwing them back dead.
You quit fishing?
We quit fishing for groupies. We got to target
a different method that you use.
Location. Place of fishing.
Make us put I didn't know much about that offshore stuff. I just couldn't understand why.
Well, the raises.
The wreck is.
The raise is only going to be about 3%.
Exactly. So we can get to it.
Right. So, well, I can understand that. Hardly catch but I just thought you would. I say you don't go out there and fish and catch one fish and turn around and come back home.
Oh, no.
Do you have any idea how many anglers are currently involved in the fishery for these species?
Microphone. You think you got a bad put in here?
Quite a few. But I know it's increasing.
And I would assume that the current regulations that you reference, you know, in your literature here, were established in the absence of any data.
Right.
They're just a guesstimate.
They're a guesstimate. In North Carolina, where they live in the Southland region, they've essentially shut down the fisheries.
Because what?
Because of overfishing. They're not allowed fishing beyond 240 meters, which is where you catch the fish. So they've effectively shut down.
But they haven't. So do they have enough data to determine they're overfish?
Yeah, because the sex ratios were all the way off, and the size distribution was completely skewed. The sex ratios were skewed.
This is a proposed two-year project. Have you come up with a budget for the second year?
It would be about the same.
About the same.
It would be good.
So really, if the board were to elect to fund it, we're really looking at $158,000.
If you funded the second year, we would have information after the first year, but the second year would let us look at temporal stability.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you do it the first year, you might even say, you know, you're going to do it second.
You know, one of the apprehensions we have of long-term projects, because we don't know what money is going to be in the future years.
Right. I think there would be valuable data out of the future years.
Any further questions? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.